Welcome. Jump into the Compassionate Leader Circle podcast, where leading with love isn't just nice, it's genius. I'm Laurel Donnellan.
And I'm Daryl Brown. We'll unpack business strategies infused with empathy and action, driving both profit and purpose. Our world is ever-changing, so discover how the savvy leader wears compassion as their power suit.
Well, thank you. I am Sarah Feely, the Chief Learning Officer at CLC. I'm an executive coach and self-proclaimed research nerd who actually reads academic papers for fun. So I oversee our purpose and well-being programs here at CLC. We work with individuals, teams, and organizations. And then I also facilitate large-scale learning initiatives with organizations and ensure that our practices and models are up to date with leading research. So I was particularly excited to meet my friend Kia at Work Human Live in Denver this past spring. And he is an incredible person with many talents, hats, and passions. He's currently the director of the Greater Good Workplaces at Greater Good Science Center, with over 20 years of experience helping leaders, teams, and organizations create collaborative pro-social change across sectors. He has a variety of different facilitation and coaching credentials. He's been a TEDx speaker, done award-winning culture change work, which really reflect his commitment to translating the science of pro-sociality into lasting organizational impact. I'm also honored to introduce Dr. Emiliana Simon-Thomas. I'm a real fan girl, so thank you for being here. The depth and breadth of your work is incredible. She is the science director of the Greater Good Science Center, where she leads major research initiatives and co-teaches the Science of Happiness course, which is the world's largest course of its kind. She's a UC Berkeley trained neuroscientist and studies how pro-social states like compassion, gratitude, and awe support health and well-being in life and at work. And they will be speaking with Laurel Donnellan today. She is our organization's founder and CEO, and I unofficially call Laurel our dream doula in that she has the gift of helping others birth what they once only dreamed of. More officially, she founded Compassionate Leaders Circle 26 years ago when compassion wasn't really part of the L&D zeitgeist. She's a compassionate leadership expert with the long-term mission of helping individuals do remarkable work in remarkable cultures through developing transformational programs, build careers and organizations from the inside out. She writes about inspiring people and organizations at Forbes. She also shines a bright light on global compassionate leaders through our annual CLC Awards. She's passionate about education, equality, among other issues, and cares deeply about really well-steeped tea, among other things. So without further ado, I'll let you all take it over.
Thank you, Sarah, for making me cry at the beginning of our podcast today. But I think that's a good start because I'm so excited about having Kia and Emiliana here. I want to thank Emiliana especially because without the scientists in this field, I wouldn't have a job. And I appreciate all the research and study and writing and probably very long days that you've had in your past. We stand on your shoulders and all the scientists' shoulders. When I was in graduate school 26 years ago, there wasn't really a lot of research around purpose, well-being, compassion, pro-social behavior. So thank you for being one of the pioneers. And Kia, we're so happy to have you as well. And I want to start with a little bit more about the creation story of the Greater Good Science Center. Where did this good idea come from? And how did the two of you get together on furthering its mission?
Really great question, Laurel. And I'll start only because I've had more time at the Greater Good Science Center. Kia has joined us more recently. The Greater Good Science Center was a dream, a vision of two just absolutely wonderful human beings, Tom and Ruth Ann Hornaday, who came to UC Berkeley and said, We feel like humans can do better. How can we invest, contribute, donate in a way that really advances our understanding of peace and well-being? And so they spoke with the psychology department and other leaders at UC Berkeley and landed on this idea of translating leading science about the advantages of well-being, about the benefits of interpersonal benevolence, of belonging, of community, of collaboration to society, to health and well-being. And thus, you know, born the Greater Good Science Center. It was originally called the Center for the Development of Peace and Well-being. That was really true to what the mission was at the time. And over the first few years of fundraising and being in the same room with UC leaders raising funds for the football program or other exciting, more briefly named entities, we realized a rebrand would be a good idea and came up with the Greater Good Science Center. It really kind of encapsulates our mission, our vision, what we want to do. I joined in 2011, so I've been here, 14, coming on 15 years. I got my PhD at UC Berkeley. I'm kind of a townie for Berkeley. I grew up in Berkeley. And after I completed my PhD, I worked for a couple of years in the South Bay at another academic institution that shall remain unnamed. If you know anything about the rivalry, you'll know what I'm talking about. And really was overjoyed at the opportunity to come and join the Greater Good Science Center to lead their initiative focused on the science and practice of gratitude. And I've just never looked back, and it's been our continuing mission. How can we help people understand how important their generosity, their connections, and their sense of belonging are to their overall well-being, and also know how to build those faculties or affordances into their lives personally, in their work, and in their communities, and, you know, ideally at a societal and even global level.
I'm going to come back and ask you a little something about some of your research. We could talk for hours about it, I'm sure, but I'm interested in Kia because your background's very different from an academic background. Tell us a little bit about you and how you came to. Is Greater Good Science Center what you folks call it, or is there a nickname?
Greater Good or GGSC.
I'm in the know of. So tell us about you, Kia.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I came to this country as an immigrant, and I landed in Louisiana during the hostage crisis, and it was a very unwelcome place. It was a place that really was not about positive cultures or kindness or any of these kinds of things. And I think that's the core of why I decided to do my work is to create workplaces and environments where pro-sociality, kindness can be important. And so I've done that as a facilitator. I'm the guy with the flip charts. I'm the guy who's trying to shift cultures and organizations. And as a consultant, I've been an executive coach. I had this crazy job trying to work on the administrative culture of UC Berkeley, all the staff at UC Berkeley, because there was about 10,000 staff. And I came across the greater good because one of the things that we wanted to see more of was more pro-social behaviors. In a university setting, people can be kind of mean. And it's like, what department are you from? You know, so I came to the greater good and asked them, how do we kind of scale some of these pro-social behaviors? And when I found out there's a center like this, I'm like, this is like, wow, this is like a dream. And so 10 years later, I was able to actually join the greater good. And it's really a dream come true.
Emiliana, I'm curious about gratitude. We're close to Thanksgiving here. So let's just delve into your research a little bit about gratitude and what you've found and maybe how we can all apply it.
Sure. So scholars define gratitude in two main ways. One is to think of it as a momentary emotional experience. So it's how you feel when you realize that something good has occurred and you really haven't had to invest any effort into realizing that goodness. It's just there for you. That's like a moment of warmth, people might describe it as, kind of a broadening of the chest, a sense of lightness, and the impulse after experiencing that state is to pay it forward. Well, there's lots of research showing that when people have that emotional experience of gratitude and then are given an opportunity to be generous or helpful out in the world, they're just much more likely to do that. The other way that scholars define gratitude is as more of an overarching characteristic. So you might be a grateful person. You might always be looking for goodness or considering how to revere or have a sense of reverence for anything good that is out there in the world. It's more of a kind of way of seeing than a momentary experience related to a specific context. Lots of scholars have measured that kind of dispositional or personality level kind of gratitude and shown that people who are more grateful have lots of advantages. They experience positive emotions more readily and more robustly. They have more satisfaction in their relationships, interpersonally and socially. If they're married, their marriages are of higher quality and longer lasting. If they are experiencing some kind of adversity or setbacks in life, which we all are going to, like it or not, they recover more gracefully and tend to learn and grow from those difficulties as opposed to kind of get spiraled into a longer term despair around them. People who are more grateful are more optimistic. They just see the possibility that sometime in the future will be better than the present moment. Studies that try to elicit gratitude in the moment in a laboratory context show the one thing I described earlier, which is that people just tend to be more, to pay it forward, to be more generous, to invest their own resources and energy in the well-being of others as a result of experiencing their own well-being benefit from something that's outside of themselves. My favorite way to think about and talk about gratitude is to try to understand what happens mentally when people are more grateful or experience gratitude, and to kind of ground it in neuroscience. When people are experiencing gratitude, for one, they're reflecting on goodness. So they're activating pathways in the brain, autobiographical, related also to the world around them, that are about goodness. And if we know anything about the brain, we know that the more you bring to mind or exercise a certain feeling or thought process, the more readily that occurs spontaneously. So just focusing on and being aware of goodness is habit forming. You become more likely to see goodness as you spend energy, time, glucose, and oxygen perceiving goodness. The second part of it is that self-transcendent part. Like, it's not about effort. It's not a tit for tat. I'm not grateful for things that I've worked for and then got rewarded for. I'm grateful for what's come to me without me having to had to invest any resources or energy or effort. And so anything that gets us out of our own head, that quiets that inner chatter that is like, well, what happened to me earlier that I should be worried about? What can I be vigilant about right now? And what might happen later that should be stressful or anxiety provoking? Anything that kind of turns that off and gets the kind of more peripheral parts of our cerebral cortex to be attuned to the world around us, to our own experiences in the moment, is beneficial to health and well-being. And then the third part is that most of the time, gratitude involves another person, right? Mm-hmm. Most of the time, that goodness is about something that somebody else did. And it can be like immediate, like I can be really grateful for Kia for drafting a deck that we're going to use in a presentation next week and just putting in that effort so that it's easier for me to weigh in and contribute. But I can also be grateful for the garden that I get to spend time in my backyard. And I can connect that. Well, why do I have that garden? Well, it's because my parents prioritized that open space. And it's because other people who came to Berkeley, who I never knew and maybe will never meet in history, built land in that way that preserved space so that there isn't, housing, neck and neck and neck and no grass or trees available. So connecting it to another person is a really powerful way to strengthen those pathways between what signals goodness or pleasure and are pathways that are dedicated to social cognition, to understanding another person's point of view, to understanding another person's emotional expressions, to mirroring or simulating some of the indices that we perceive in others when we think about or spend time in proximity with them. So again, it's like more goodness, less self-focus, and more goodness connected to others that all arises from gratitude, from being more grateful and practicing gratitude.
Fantastic. I'm going to make a big leap here, but we have a facilitator and consultant in the room that I think can help us. So Kia, the things that Emiliana's describing sound like characteristics or traits or skills of kind leaders. Is that true? Is gratitude part of the profile of being a kind leader?
I think so. I mean, I think particularly when it involves others, right? I think particularly when it involves thanking the people around you for all the work that they do, or being appreciative of your team and the effort that's put forward. You know, I think for me, kindness is something that's active. And so when we actually stop and say, hey, thank you for doing this, or I really appreciate that, somehow when a leader does that, it carries a lot of weight. It actually makes people feel better. It seems to me that it's really a really important part of kindness, is to express gratitude for the people who work with you.
I think it also carries a lot of weight when you don't thank people, unfortunately, you know, and I think leaders forget the weight they carry by inaction, you know.
Absolutely.
People notice.
Well, Laurel, about 15 years ago, the John Templeton Foundation did a survey of people's experiences of gratitude in the U.S. Like, where do you experience it? How grateful are you? How grateful do you think other people are? And workplaces were the lowest. People experience gratitude at work, bar none, bottom of the list compared to in their social interactions, in their academic or, you know, educational contexts, in their families, around the table. Workplaces were the worst. And interestingly, the least common were leaders being thanked by their employers. So, or their employees, excuse me.
The least common was employees not thanking their leaders.
That's right. That's right.
I expect a lot from you, but I'm not going to treat you like a human and thank you.
Yeah, exactly. And then there's a loss of data. There are many studies that speak to the value and the promise of gratitude as a beneficial part of a successful business enterprise. So Ryan Fair is a scholar who's written voluminously about the importance of gratitude in organizations at the individual level, at the team level, at the sort of whole company level. One of the scholars that is joining the Kind Workplaces event actually operationalized kindness at work as attributing company success to the employees, not themselves. That is a form of gratitude, right? It's recognizing that others were the sources of goodness. Something outside the self is a source of goodness, rather than a more reciprocal kind of tit for tat kind of thinking. And that's the risk with workplaces, is because we go to work and we get paid, we kind of think, well, we don't need gratitude anymore. Right, we don't need gratitude because it is a pay to play kind of enterprise. But actually, our brains aren't wired that way. And our nervous system actually expects that when we invest our resources and our energy in a common goal or a common objective or a shared vision, that it leads to some kind of recognizable and meaningful effort, right? That my effort is part of a shared success story, not just something that I privately and independently get paid for. The last study I'll share is one that compared the effects of giving people a kind of modest financial bonus or a gift certificate to a restaurant, or a phone call from leadership that said, hey, you know, thank you for the hard work you're doing. It makes a really big difference to our organization. And I benefit from all of this success as a leader. It really helps me. It helps the organization. And I appreciate that you're putting your time and effort into it. All three things were associated with more productivity on the subsequent day. But then 2 days, 3 days, 4 days out, the money and the pizza gift certificate didn't have that lasting effect. In fact, the productivity of the employees kind of went back to where it was before the whole exercise started. But the call from the boss, those people who got that affirmation, who got that recognition, they had a persistent improvement in their productivity and their creativity, their innovation, et cetera.
That's a great reminder. It's very simple. And I think, I imagine, although we don't have the data, that a call is different than a text.
Oh, goodness. I mean, I don't want to throw texting or email under the bus. What I think is a mistake people make with text and email is it's not specific enough and it's not there's not enough context. But people make that mistake in person, too. So I could walk by Kia's door, you know, wave and say, hey, thanks, and keep walking. And that would have a certain impact. It's not worth nothing. But if I pause for 12 seconds and say, you know, hey, Kia, thanks for working on that deck. I know you put a lot of time into it and it's really great and it's going to help me and us be successful in our presentation next week. Like that speaks specifically to Kia's effort, to his skills, to his abilities, and to the benefit that his effort has on both him and me and our shared goal. And so that variety of expressing your gratitude for a person is much more powerful, whether it's in person or in an email or in a text. So I often suggest, like, don't make in-person versus digital be the like point of success or not success. The point of success or not success is being specific and acknowledging the effort that a person put in and the benefit that their effort actually leads to, and maybe reminding them of what it is that you're thanking them for.
Yeah, I'm going to shift over to your big event that's coming up soon, but I just want to offer one other thing for our listeners that I'm reminded of in this conversation that we try to do as an organization and we try to do with our clients. We do an appreciation exercise, like at the end of retreats or at the end of a program, where everyone in that room has to appreciate everyone else out loud, including the leader. So this way the leader gets some appreciation as well as everyone in the room. So that's kind of a simple thing. And we do it virtually too. And when I remembered to do it as often as I should, which this conversation is reminding me to do more often, it really changes everything. It, you know, and it's probably really good to do even at the beginning of a meeting because it'll change the entire meeting. But thank you for all that amazing research and wisdom on gratitude. I think it's just a great reminder, and it can be simple, but it has to be intentional. So one of the reasons you're both here today is you have an amazing event that's going to be launching a movement as well as just an event coming up on December 1st. And Kia, I'd love for you to tell us about it and tell us how it came about. And you can both also talk about some of the amazing people that will be on the stage.
Sure. Yeah. So this idea actually arose when Sarah and I were together at the Work Human Conference. It just seemed to me that as I looked into the media, there were just so many examples of unkind leadership. And it seemed to me that these unkind leaders were like, this is how we're supposed to succeed. Like, it seems like they're winning, right? And so I really got to thinking, it kind of really clarified for me what we really want, which is really the opposite of that. And I started to think about this question of like, well, is it true that, like, you know, nice guys finish last or nice people finish last? And I came across this research by Mei Fang and Wei Lijie, and they had studied 3,500 CEOs. And as Miliana mentioned, they tried to assess which of those CEOs was pro-social. Or kind. You know, we can kind of substitute kind for now for pro-sociality. And they assessed, they found that the first kind of filter was, do these CEOs give their time and money outside of their company to nonprofit causes? Do they serve on boards? Do they give their money of their own free will? That was the first filter. And then the second filter was, when they have their earnings calls and the company is doing well, do they take the credit for themselves, or do they really like credit their team? And when the company's doing poorly, do they take the blame themselves, or do they throw their team under the bus? And so that was the sort of second filter. And then these researchers, who are actually professors of accounting, so they're really interested in profitability, they understand how to measure profitability, they found that those pro-social leaders or those kind leaders, they actually outperformed financially. Their companies did better. And it turned out that it had a lot to do with the kind of policies they put into place, but they kind of create a sort of almost like an insurance policy for risk and volatility. And so, you know, this was really huge for me. And I was like, okay, maybe we're onto something here. And so what we're doing on December 1st is an event called Why Kind Leaders Win. And it's this idea that being kind is not only good for yourself, but it's also good for your company. It's good for your people and your company. It sort of hits all the check marks. And there's something about kindness that is so clear. It's unequivocal. It's kind of hard to be against. And I think sort of galvanizes what we want to see in the world. We want to see a new story about how to succeed in business and in organizations. Because I think this story that you kind of have to be a hard-nosed, you know, kind of unkind leader, only focused on quarterly returns, may not be true. And so that's the event happening on December 1st.
And tell us about who's speaking and what you're going to actually do.
Okay. Well, first of all, we have our own kind leader, which is Rich Lyons, the chancellor of UC Berkeley. We have Yamini Rangan, who is the CEO of HubSpot. She's a very kind leader, has created a really wonderful organization focused on a culture of kindness. Dennis Ring, who is the former CEO of Ocho Chocolates, and he started the Whole Foods 365 brand. He's got some amazing stories about the chocolate factory that he ran in Oakland. And we've got Kiana Schmiedel, who is from the Work Human organization. She's got fascinating stories about what their study of organizations has found. And we've got Emiliana, who is really providing a lot of this science around pro-sociality and how it helps organizations. And so it's going to be a really interesting, fun event. We're going to have Wei-Li Zhe there as well, who did this research on 3,500 CEOs. And it's going to be a casual conversation on stage, the science and the actual practicality of how do I, you know, if I want to lead this way, what do I do on Tuesday? What does it look like? And so, yeah, we're very excited about it. And we hope that folks can attend and also grow from there the kind of work we want to see in organizations.
And who does this event best serve? Who should attend? What's your target audience?
I think leaders of any kind, you don't have to be the CEO, HR folks, anybody who's interested in organizations being more pro-social, I think would benefit from this, knowing not just the science behind it, but also having some practical tips and tools for how to do it. You know, I was talking with one of the speakers at a cafe the other day, and he's just like, I hope people walk out of there wanting to, no matter where they sit in an organization, be able to spread kindness, because the impact is huge. And I agree with you, Laurel. If you do it at the beginning of the meeting, it can markedly change the tenor of a meeting.
I would also add MBA students, anybody who is aspiring to be part of an organization, to at some point rise up in the ranks to a position of leadership, and people who want to go work for organizations. I think it's reasonable to actually seek out employment in organizations that have that quality to them. So as people are looking for jobs, are they actually attuned to, hey, what's the culture like here? Is this a place where people are kind? Is the leadership invested in my well-being, right? Is well-being a an index that we measure and track over time and adjust our approaches accordingly in order to uplift and sustain? Because if so, great, this is where I want to work and this is where I want to invest my time and energy. So, I feel like it's good for anybody who is going to get a job at any point in their life.
Yeah, I think I would add, I think there's a lot of people who believe in this, maybe from a common sense point of view, not a scientific point of view, that kind leaders win and they want to work at a culture where people show gratitude and are civil to one another and supportive of one another. And sometimes if you believe that and you're in an organization that doesn't behave that way, it can be very lonely. And so I would just do a shout out. If you believe that kind leaders win and kind cultures win, and you're kind of disheartened right now, go to this event or sign up for the Greater Good Science Center newsletter, or just go to the website and you will feel different. You will feel hope. We all need hope right now. You know, I think a lot of us that are in the compassion and kindness business are brokenhearted right now, you know, and I get brokenhearted hearing about CEOs that aren't kind. And I get brokenhearted when I see our elected officials not being kind. And if we're going to make a difference in the long run, we need to be sane and we need to be hopeful. So yeah. Go to this event and connect with these amazing people if you want to be sane and hopeful.
Yeah, I absolutely believe that 100%. And I would say that as I've been kind of on this journey, every time I talk to folks, people tell me, oh, have you heard of this kind leader or this kind leader? And you just see that there are actually so many kind leaders out there who are doing amazing work. They're just not being talked about enough. And that's why we're trying to put them on this stage and to show there's actually a lot of folks out there who lead this way. And we want to tell their stories and we want to share the science behind it as well.
One, the reason we don't hear these stories is largely because of how our attention and media tends to work, right? The stories that get the headlines are the ones that are distressing and immediately concerning. But the more frequent cases of kind leaders and organizations where people are happy that they work where they work just kind of roll ahead under the radar. The second part I'd like to share is that along with that hope and optimism, I expect that people will walk out of this event feeling empowered and capable. They'll have an understanding of what it takes and how to do what they may already have, as you described, Laurel, kind of an existing understanding or knowledge around or belief around. Like I might believe that kindness, but I don't know how to do it. How do you do that? I'm lonely. I don't have any power. Okay. When you see other people doing it and being successful and feel a sense of connection and belonging in that community, and you hear how they did it, what are the strategies they took? There's a new kind of sense of agency and empowerment around how to go in and promote or advocate for change.
And I think the fact that you're featuring scientists that are accountants is really smart, right? Like this is not only the ethical thing to do, but it's the effective way to organize a company and lead a company. And there's an ROI to kindness. And I love that you're addressing that because that can also be very empowering to people that want to make changes or want to be change agents, no matter what their position is in their organization. Hey, this scientist has proven that we can make more money if we're kinder to one another. I mean, it's really fantastic. And I'm so excited for the event and for the movement. What are the long-term visions for your organization and this movement that you're starting? What do you hope to change over the long term?
I mean, one thing, you know, we've been involved in a strategic planning process for the greater good. And one of the things that the greater good has been able to do is to reach, you know, about 1 million people per month come to the greater good for articles and podcasts and resources. And what we're wanting to do is start to impact systems more and thinking about systems change. And so for workplaces, if we want to impact systems, we realize that you really need to impact the leaders who run those systems, right? A lot of my work over the last 20 years has been working with HR leaders and folks like that. And then they get into the C-suite and they bring this stuff up about pro-social leadership or these kinds of things. And oftentimes, you know, it just gets dismissed. And so for us, a big part of this work is around systems change and impacting those leaders so that when those leaders get it, they have their HR teams, they have other folks who can kind of come in behind them and really make things happen. And so that's the idea around systems change and why we think leaders are so important. They have an outsized impact on the culture of an organization. And so if we can get them understanding how this helps them, their company, you know, because when we say be kind, we're first, I think, saying be kind to yourself. It's a lot of weight to carry an organization on your shoulders. And you've got to be kind to your company as well. Like if your company doesn't succeed, you know, you're going to have to lay off all these employees. And that's nothing kind about that. And then be kind to your people, be kind to the planet, right? So we're talking about a holistic view of kindness that puts the organization in there as well. All of this has to go. And I think these things can actually be aligned really well. It's not, you don't have to choose between profitability and kindness. I think you can have both.
Yeah, I would agree with Kia that transcending the emphasis on the self and, you know, how to be happier as a person, how to improve your own life, and instead focusing on how people together can organize and create structures and policies that actually are of service to the well-being of everyone, rather than, again, optimizing or maximizing one's own well-being. But I do want to honor what Kia said, that it's almost like a 360-degree focus, or I think of just any scenario where we're investing in or concerning ourselves with well-being, everyone's has to be included in that emphasis, whether it's my own or my family's or my neighbors or a global citizens, or as Kia mentioned, the planet. Like, how can we optimize for well-being in a broad strokes, inclusive, holistic way, rather than focusing most of the emphasis on the individual?
Beautiful. Well, I'm excited for everyone that can attend and everyone that will be connected with you through this effort and this movement. Before we part, I always like to ask my guests to leave my listeners with two things. Like, what is one life lesson you want to share with them? And what is one leadership lesson you want to share? So let's start with life. Kia, what's a life lesson you'd like to share?
I think it's actually related to what Emiliana just said. I've realized in my life that when I overly focus on myself, that it's really not usually that helpful, but focusing on others has always had huge benefits. So yeah, getting out of my own head and help focusing on others has always brought me a lot of joy.
Emiliana?
You know, my life lesson is going to sound kind of nerdy, but that's how it goes. One of my favorite bodies of work recently has been from a team at UCSF trying to figure out why people benefit physiologically and psychologically from things like meditation or mindfulness. And what they've landed on is the importance of something called deep rest. And these are states or periods of time in your day when you're really just giving your mind and your body a chance to recover, to restore equanimity or some kind of relaxed, contented state. It's very sensible in many other ways of our life. We honor that. We're like, oh, I went on a really hard run yesterday, so today is my rest day. But we really need rest moments every day. And so just prioritizing those opportunities to do whatever is restful for you. Doesn't have to be meditating in front of a candle or an altar. It can be going for a slow walk in a natural setting where you give yourself the opportunity to really lean into the color and the smell and the sensations that are there from nature. So yeah, deep rest, really prioritizing and acknowledging and honoring the importance and the value. You can't do your next best thing if you don't give your body and your mind those opportunities for deep rest.
Thank you. And leadership lessons, Kia?
I would say for me, one thing that I think about with leadership is leaders often think of themselves as being on the top of a pyramid, having to control everything below them. And that just sounds really difficult and not helpful. So I often think of leaders being at the bottom of a pyramid and trying to enable things to happen above them. And so that visual image helps me whenever I'm in a position of leadership and it feels too much to sit on top of the pyramid.
My leadership lesson is related to Kia's and it's delegate. Delegate creativity, ideas, solutions to problems and tasks. Most people think delegation means that you know, get somebody else to do the busy work. But sometimes as a leader, you really don't know all the possible solutions or ways to address a particular scenario, and open your mind for the time that it takes to crowdsource a solution, delegate that creative thinking, ask for ideas. I think it's just often surprising to many, particularly those in a position of leadership with that sort of pyramid view. I'm the one in charge. I'm the one who has to figure everything out. That when they do kind of cast an invitation widely, they get these magnificent solutions to what it is they're trying to resolve.
Well, I could talk to both of you and learn from you for hours and hours, but we've come to the end of our time today. And please let us all know, how can people register for your event and learn more about you?
Sure. You can just go to greatergood.berkeley.edu and you'll see the Why Kind Leaders Win event right there. And yeah, folks can register and show up. And greatergood.berkeley.edu also has tons of other articles, podcasts, all kinds of resources for living a meaningful life. So lots to see there.
Yeah. And for those of you who are turned on by the science and want to learn more granular ways to promote well-being in the workplace, we have a series of online courses focused on how to promote happiness at work. They're on the edX platform. We have Foundations of Happiness at Work, Empathy and Emotional Intelligence at Work, and Mindfulness and Resilience to Stress at Work. And those are all free if you want to participate as an audit student, but you can also pay a fee and get an official transcript report that you've completed the courses. So yeah, please come visit and avail yourself of our resources. We do all this for you.
It's been an honor being with you both. Thank you so much.
And that's a heart-wrapped episode of the Compassionate Leader Circle podcast. May your compass always point to kindness.
As you navigate the world, let compassion be your North Star. Join us next time as we continue to redefine success one heart-led decision at a time.
Lead wisely, lead with heart. You can learn more about us at CompassionateLeadersCircle.com.